Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The toll being taken by the coronavirus outbreak isn't just physical. Even those who haven't contracted COVID-19 are beginning to feel some psychological effects. Let's face it, our lives have changed. We're stuck at home. We've been cut off from our extended families, friends, co-workers. Many of those trying to adapt to working at home also face a house full of kids trying to cope with being cooped up and with online learning all at the same time. And worse, this pandemic has resulted in millions of job losses. Those people are stuck in homes and apartments they can't afford in the absence of a paycheck. Stress, anxiety, a lack of control, and depression are things many of us are having to deal with. So this hour, some advice on how to cope with them during this abnormal time. Dr. Chastity Adams is a licensed psychologist in private practice in Charlotte. She joins us from her home. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
Dr. Kevin Jericho is also a licensed psychologist and director of the Anxiety and OCD Treatment Center in Charlotte. Thank you for joining us, too.
Thanks for having me.
And Courtney Diliberto is a licensed clinical social worker at University Psychological Associates in Charlotte. Morning. Welcome.
Morning. Thanks.
Everybody's in their respective locations. We're going to try to do this like we have in the last several weeks, in isolation. Dr. Jericho, one of your specialties, I understand, is dealing with anxiety. And Dr. Adams, you do a lot of work with people experiencing stress. So how would you assess the impact of this virus and what this virus has imposed on us, both the health threat of it as well as the measures we put into place to minimize infection? How would you assess the impact on people's psychological state? I'll start with you, Dr. Jericho.
Yeah, well, I would say it's something new for all of us. So it's been interesting to be a part of this. Assessing the impact, you know, it's been variable. Some people, as an anxiety specialist, some people are actually doing better. I would say that they're coping quite well with this and having to confront situations that might cause anxiety less as the result of social distancing. So there's been surprising progress for some people. Other people, you know, the isolation is challenging and they're coping more with, you know, depression and that sort of thing. And then of course there's the people who are more anxious as a result of health concerns, financial concerns, you know, social isolation concerns. So it really has run the gamut of all different reactions in my experience so far.
Dr. Adams?
Yes, just to piggyback a little bit on what Dr. Jericho has said, it has been bearable in my practice. There are some clients who are coping well, and although they're coping well, it's still very stressful. So they're not declining, but they're not necessarily living their best life, quote unquote, right now. But they're managing. The theme of my current clients has been, I'm overwhelmed. It's manageable, but it's overwhelming. I have many mothers who are working from home with their children, and it's so challenging for them. They are managing, but it's not optimal. So again, for me, it hasn't been a decline, but it's not a lot of progression. I don't hear a lot of people saying, oh my goodness, this time has been so awesome. I've started a new practice or I've started a new business. I'm not quite hearing that. I'm hearing I'm staying afloat.
Are stress and anxiety two different sides of the same coin? How related are they? I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, my view of that is that, you know, I consider stress as essentially kind of the length of your to-do list, the demand sort of being placed upon you at any one time. Whereas anxiety is really thinking about bad things happening in the future. You know, will I get sick? Will I lose my job? Will someone I care about, you know, get sick from this? You know, those sorts of things. So, yeah, I do distinguish between those. I think they're two very different things. You can be, you know, highly stressed and not anxious and not very stressed, but very anxious. So I think it's important to draw that distinction between those two things.
So, Courtney, we are all dealing and reacting to this new reality in very different ways, and teenagers may be doing things that are really out of character, even for teenagers. Can people be stressed or anxiety? And we have to understand that about teenagers, that they don't they haven't been through this before. None of us has. But can people be stressed or filled with anxiety and not really understand what's happening to them?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a pretty common theme among my clients. I do work with children, teens, and adults. And I think that goes across ages because it's a very confusing time. And the number one kind of word that comes up in pretty much every session I have is, this is just so weird. And so people are kind of grappling with, what emotion do I feel? Is it anxiety? Is it stress? Is it depression? Is it just feeling overwhelmed? Or are there bits of this that are okay? And so I think that with everything changing day to day and a lot of unanswered questions about when will life go back to quote unquote normal, when will I be able to see my friends or family again, that, yeah, trying to understand what to feel is a challenge.
How unusual, Dr. Adams, is it for people to have emotional moments that are uncommon for them, but not to connect this to the pandemic? If you're an adult, you would have more, I would think, self-understanding, but maybe not.
Yes, with this time being so unprecedented, at this moment, everything and anything goes. Emotions are coming from everywhere and every which way. And for me, my number one thing is to validate what they are experiencing, because there is no right or wrong emotion during this time. It's so unprecedented. I like to highlight that. Whatever you're experiencing at this moment or any other moment, please allow yourself to experience it without judgment.
So if you're seeing behavior in teenagers, or your spouse for that matter, maybe unusual for them, and you know, because you just assume that it is because they are trying to cope with the current situation. Courtney, what do you do about it? How do you help those people through that?
I think it's helping people understand why they're doing whatever the behavior is, especially when you're thinking, I know you mentioned teens or children, they don't always have the words for what they're feeling or unable to identify it. And even sometimes I think as adults, we're not able to stop and check in with what actually is happening from a thought perspective as well as an emotional perspective. We are prone to just kind of reaction, and we react in ways that have worked in the past. So whatever behavior probably was a form of coping that worked at some point in their life. So I think when we begin to shift to view behavior as serving a purpose, it becomes less stigmatizing, it becomes less angry, becomes less of a punishment or a challenge, and it helps us to understand, okay, what's actually going on? So if we can help someone pause and say, well, why are you doing what you're doing? Can you begin to understand the feeling? Then we can really find ways to cope or to manage through this that are helpful. And like Dr. Adam said, it's really important to validate whatever emotions are coming up and whatever experience you're having, because that may be really different for every single person, but all of those feelings are important and valid. Mm-hmm.
Does it help at all, Dr. Jericho, does it help at all to, when you're feeling depressed or when you're feeling anxiety or you're stressed, to know that this is why this is happening? Is it helpful to understand that you're only going through this because of these extraordinary circumstances?
Absolutely. And I would echo those comments in terms of validating this. This is extraordinary. It is unprecedented. There's a massive amount of uncertainty. So certainly some anxiety is warranted. There really is a real threat to be concerned about. And also the things that typically keep our mood up, pleasant events like going to a movie, going out to dinner, socializing, exercising to some degree, you know, those things that tend to keep our mood up have been impacted by this as well. So it's a big challenge for my clients to, you know, how do you creatively, you know, get those things back as much as you can to keep your mood up and cope with these things. So, yeah, I think it is very helpful to understand how this is personally affecting you and then responding accordingly.
What signs do you look for? How do you recognize this in yourself that you are, that you're experiencing stress, that you have depression, that you are going through a period of anxiety? What do you look for? How do you self-diagnose, Dr. Jericho?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. You know, that these things can manifest themselves in lots of different ways. Typically with depression, we see lack of interest in doing things, a lack of pleasure, a down mood, irritability, lack of appetite, difficulty sleeping, those kind of things. And we see those with stress and anxiety as well. So those are some basic things to look out for. How is this affecting your mood? How do you feel physically? What's your energy level? What's your interest in things? How's your appetite? You know, how's your sleep been? Those kind of things. I think when you see changes on some of those fronts, you start to wonder, you know, is this affecting me in a more significant way than I would like?
Harvard psychiatrist Ron Perlis says that this disease is going to create yet another and a different curve, not just the curve of tamping down the number of infections to keep hospitals open and free, but he's concerned that we're going to be dealing for years with the psychiatric fallout, which will, he says, be substantial, and we need to flatten that curve too. Dr. Adams, do you agree with that?
I do, absolutely. And unfortunately, many people during this time aren't receiving the same level of services. I have gone virtual primarily, but I'm a hybrid because I understand that some clients are unable to see me virtually because of their home situation. I think many of us take for granted that we may have 5-bedroom homes and these spaces where we can go and safely converse with our clients. I have some people where that just doesn't work. So for them, I am still coming into the office, and I think that is helpful. But many people are unable to still receive the same level of care. If I think about young people in foster home or things to that nature, a lot of decisions have been stopped at this moment. They can't go back into their homes, or maybe they're stuck with an abuser. There are so many situations right now that aren't discussed, but once all of this is over, they will be revealed, and we will see that new curve that they're talking about that needs to be flattened.
Let me get your take on that too, Dr. Jericho.
Yeah, it's a great point. I would say there's a lot of uncertainty involved. I think Dr. Adams brings up some great points in terms of the curve of this fallout. We're still obviously in a very early stages of this. And so, I think it's quite possible that we could see, mental health fallout for years based on this. And I think we'll have to see how it goes. I'm sort of a fan of human resilience. So I'm optimistic that we'll adapt and adjust, but obviously there's challenges here that are unprecedented. So I think that it's quite possible that we could see a rise in those things over the next few years.
Does it surprise you, Courtney, that we're talking about the fallout from this, psychologically speaking, lasting years? Does that surprise you? It surprises me. I only got 30 seconds, but maybe I have a little more than that. Does it surprise you?
I wouldn't say it surprises me, but maybe that's just because this is the work that I'm doing. And I want to kind of echo some of the things that were mentioned. I think with domestic violence, that's a concern, with foster homes, with a lot of resources that have been shut down. It creates environments that may be very unsafe for people. So I think there will be residual fallout from that.
Let me stop you there because we have to take a break. I'm sorry. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the psychological impact of being sequestered and of this virus, COVID-19 virus in general, this morning. And we just talked about how the fallout from this, psychologically speaking, may go on for several years. It's yet another curve to be associated with the COVID-19 outbreak. And we're talking about all this with Dr. Chastity Adams, a licensed psychologist and author of Reclaiming Your Best Self, The Four Disciplines of Mindful Acceptance. Dr. Kevin Jericho is also with us, another licensed psychologist, director of anxiety and OCD treatment of the Anxiety and OCD Treatment Center and co-author of 10 Simple Solutions to Worry, and Courtney Diliberto, a licensed clinical social worker at University Psychological Associates. Dr. Robert Leahy, he's an attending psychologist at New York Presbyterian and the author of The Worry Cure, says the most important thing a person can do is to strike a balance between recognizing the potential threats that create stress and anxiety while avoiding unnecessary panic. That would seem easier said than done for some people. Dr. Jericho, how would you advise people to approach that suggestion?
Yeah, that's a good suggestion by Dr. Leahy. And also a good question. I think probably, you know, I'm very familiar with Dr. Leahy's work, and I think the challenges as anxiety therapists that we face is that there is a fair amount of legitimacy to this threat. So as he's pointing out that some anxiety is appropriate here, taking appropriate precautions, following, you know, health CDC guidelines, that sort of thing, is what he, I think, is alluding to there, is that this is something to take seriously. To panic about it is probably not productive. And so to kind of strike that balance between taking this threat seriously, validating those concerns, taking appropriate steps to protect yourself and others, while also not thinking in overly catastrophic terms about it, I think would be the way to walk that line.
Courtney, if somebody tells you to relax, you probably won't be able to relax. If you tell somebody to calm down, don't worry, the same thing is probably true. It just sets them up to be more anxiety filled than they were before. Experts say that what you should be doing is validating the feelings of people who are having difficulty, acknowledging what they're feeling. How does that help, and how do you validate those feelings?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Because I think you're right. The reason if someone says, okay, calm down, relax, it's only going to escalate it because they feel like what I'm feeling is not allowed or is not okay. And so I think name it to tame it is kind of a simple way that I say a lot with my clients, is just being able to name what your emotion is, maybe visualize it, maybe connect to where you feel it in your body, connect to whatever story is going through your mind. And just to tell yourself or to whoever is sitting in front of you that it's okay to feel what you're feeling. It's okay to have irrational thoughts or fear-based thoughts about the future. And you don't have to change that in the moment. So I think it's really important that we first acknowledge the emotion, let ourselves feel it in whatever way we need to. Maybe that's crying or journaling or expressing it in some capacity. And then we move on to a place where then we begin to let go of some of those fears and come back to the present moment. But I think a lot of us want to jump to step two, which is like, I just want to make myself feel better. Mm-hmm. And I want to make this person in front of me feel better. So I just want them to calm down. When really step one is the most important, of just accepting and acknowledging the emotions, because they're going to be there regardless of whether we acknowledge them or not. They're just going to come up in times when they're not ideal.
So everybody handles this, I guess, in their own way. Some people are handling it better than others, and adults, one would hope, are dealing with this better than perhaps teenagers or children, but then maybe not, because it all falls on the shoulders of adults who are trying to adjust to new pressures and perhaps a lack of income and going through, well, I guess, the ringer right now. How is this, though, affecting children who are stuck at home, preteens who are having to go online and learn in a different way, who have been cut off from friends? Some are dealing with disappointment over canceled proms and canceled senior plays and canceled playoff games, and their graduations may or may not be held, probably won't be held, something they've been looking forward to for years. How, Dr. Adams, are they dealing with this? How can you get past all these disappointments?
So some of the adolescents that I work with have actually been angry because this may be their senior year, or they had a particular trip or some other big event planned. And for adolescents, sometimes it's difficult for them to see beyond the moment. And so if we're able to see beyond the moment, we realize that we're making a sacrifice for the greater good. But if they're stuck in the moment, they are actually angry. So for those adolescents, we speak of creative ways to connect, creative ways to find community, and creative ways to still get their needs met, although that specific event was canceled.
Mm. Are any of you, all of you, experiencing an uptick in patients or clients seeking help through all of this? Or are you seeing an increase in stress and anxiety in the patients you regularly see? I'll just go around the table here. Dr. Jericho, you take it first. Are you experiencing that?
An uptick in clients?
In the number of people seeking help and the number of established clients who are now coming to you with a whole different set of stress-related issues.
Yes, I would say we've seen an uptick in that, old clients and new clients coming in with, you know, associated stress and anxiety issues. Absolutely, I'd say there's been an increase.
Mm. Well, what about you, Dr. Adams?
So I have seen an increase in phone calls. I'm actually not taking new clients because I'm accommodating my current clients and I am at home with two children. Mm-hmm. So I have seen an increase and I've referred for those, but my current clients, many of them are speaking of a host of new symptoms related to being at home with their partners and their children. So that's not what they came in to see me for, but that is now the new stressor. How do I deal with this person that I'm not accustomed to seeing all day, every day? We work well when the other person went to work or whatever, but now that we're together all day, what am I to do?
I want to come back to that because that's something we haven't really talked about on this program today or in any previous programs relating to this. But I want to come back to that in just a second. But Courtney, what about you? Are you experiencing an uptick in people seeking help through this situation?
I would say I'm having yes and no. My practice, I work with a group of clinicians, and we tend to get a lot of our referrals from primary care offices. And we partner a lot with doctors, and a lot of people I think are actually maybe falling through the cracks here because they're not able to go and have the in-person care. So I have had clients who I haven't seen in a while who've come back to me, and we are taking as a practice new clients on, and we're trying to provide telehealth as well as phone sessions because of people who are unable to sit in front of a computer and have privacy. So we're getting creative around allowing people to sit in their car and talk to us or walk outside and take a phone call. So it's been hit or miss. I've maintained my clients and definitely an increase in stress around this and anxiety. And I've had some people come back who I haven't seen in a while. But I also think across the board, because I work with, you know, 13 other clinicians, that some people have had people drop off because they're afraid of not being able to pay for sessions. They have this fear, even though we're all going to be flexible right now and we're going to work with people. I just don't think they know that. And maybe if they're not seeing their doctor, they're not getting connected to us.
Money is a problem for a lot of people. And John on Facebook says it is very stressful having little or no income right now. This has caused a great deal of stress in our house, but I still trust Governor Cooper and his state health officials. Please do not open North Carolina too soon. Talk about the impact that having no income, the worries that that generates, Dr. Jericho, for people. That's a real fact of life that it affects you in every way. And I'm not sure that there is a way around it. Is there a way to help people bolster their psychological health in the face of that?
Well, you're 100% right. I mean, it really impacts everything. And as we said earlier, we're still early in this process. So, you know, when your financial health is threatened, you know, it really hits to your core, every aspect of life. You know, we would obviously focus on how can you cope with this most effectively, but it is a real problem, right? And so there's no going around that.
you mentioned something a second ago, Dr. Adams, about being cooped up with the same people all day. A lot of people, a lot of spouses, don't they work in different offices. They go to work. They don't see their spouse all day. They come together at night for dinner and then spend the evening together, and off again they go in the morning. And the same is true for kids who go off to school. And now they, everybody is together all at the same time, all in the same house. And they can't go anywhere. They can't visit friends and get out of the house. Are there any tips to dealing with this highly unusual situation where it's just hard to get me time?
I think mindfulness is more important than ever right now. I think this is a great time to consider some type of mindful regimen. And there are many apps out there to allow you to get in touch with the present moment at any given situation, regardless to what's going on around you. And in many situations, it is chaotic around them. So definitely consider developing a mindfulness regimen. And I have some free apps I can mention.
Okay.
Insight Timer, Headspace, Calm, Mindfulness. Those are four big ones out there that people can consider.
What was the first one? Because you broke up. I'm sorry. What was the first one?
Insight Timer.
Okay.
Calm, C-A-L-M. Headspace. And one is called Mindfulness.
And these are free phone apps.
Yes.
I've seen the advertisements for Calm on television. Just take me through one of those apps. Tell me through that app. What does it do? I mean, what I hear is rainfall for 60 seconds. And is that it?
No, there are different ones that you can choose. There are different selections that you can choose. I often encourage people who do not have a mindfulness regimen to begin with the shortest one, which may be 1 or 2 minutes. And it may just be rain for that particular one. And for that, we encourage the person to just allow whatever thoughts that are coming to your mind to flow. Don't judge them. Do not stop them. Do not try to reason with them. Just allow them to come and go during that relaxing application that you're listening to.
Why does not the acceptance that this is what I'm thinking, this is what I'm feeling, and spending time with that and letting it flow, why does that not cause greater anxiety? Because suddenly you're allowing these thoughts to give voice to themselves in your head, and you become even more aware of them. Why does that not increase your anxiety?
Well, awareness is a great thing. We are aware that they are a stream of thoughts. We are aware that we are not our thoughts. We are aware that that is just consciousness flowing. We're gaining some distance from those thoughts when we increase awareness of them. When we are not aware, we become one with those thoughts. We think whatever that is going through our mind at this given moment is the truth. But when we notice that these are just thoughts, we can gain distance from them and see that these are just thoughts that I'm having in this moment. They will come and they will go. I do not need to get lost in these thoughts. I do not need to go down the rabbit hole of these thoughts. I can just notice them come and go.
Dr. Jericho, you said that some of your patients say that they are totally panicked and worried, or super stressed and sad. Are you finding that these complaints are what they felt at the beginning of this, and it just hit them like a ton of bricks? Or are these feelings building as this thing goes on week after week after week?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say it varies. You know, for some people, right when this started, it really hit them hard. Particularly with health concerns and that sort of anxiety. But as this evolves, new threats are coming up, like unemployment and financial concerns and some of the things that teens are facing. I know some of the colleges have already said that, next fall will be online. I think almost it feels like each week brings a new set of challenging circumstances. And so it does seem to evolve or change. In terms of what people are concerned about week to week.
And Courtney, your clients, you say, are reporting fear or uncertainty about the future. I guess that's income related and also whether this will ever end and when we go back to normalness. But they're also experiencing feelings of loneliness and guilt. Where does the guilt come from?
So I think there's a level of empathy or just community that is being experienced because they're seeing things on the news. They're seeing things that are happening in other places. And if I'm not personally affected, then maybe I'm feeling guilty that, well, I'm actually okay right now. And I want to do more, but I can't. So I think people are struggling with that because I have a lot of clients too who are saying part of this is okay for me. Like I'm financially secure and I'm stable in my career and I'm healthy right now. And so I think they're struggling with, I'm doing well, but other people aren't. And what do I do with those emotions? So that's a common theme that I can deal with, or if I'm not sick, but people I know are sick and dying. Cause I think there's just a level of helplessness, that tends to come up. And so trying to encourage people, to take care of themselves and that it's okay to enjoy moments during this, because in everything in life, there's going to be good with the bad. And those things can coexist. They're not all or nothing, but I think when there's times, yeah.
Is this guilt a kind of survivor guilt?
I think it's very similar to that. Absolutely. It's just among the current crisis.
So how do you tell yourself that it's, because you witness all this suffering around you, you can't get away from it in the news. You watch healthcare professionals struggling. You watch people dying left and right. People are without an income and they're suffering greatly because of that. Businesses are struggling as well. How, in the face of all that, if you're one of the fortunate people who are okay in every way, how do you deal? How do you tell yourself it's okay that I'm this way?
Yeah. I was going to say, I tell my clients to just acknowledge that we're all doing the best we can right now. And that if you choose to sit in that guilt, it's not benefiting any of the healthcare workers in the front line. It's not benefiting anyone else. And if you are in a position and where you're fortunate that you can do more, there are ways that you can proactively kind of help by volunteering, by donating money, by making masks. A lot of people have kind of gotten creative, which I think is really a beautiful part of this. Where people are creating masks or their own handmade hand sanitizer and they're distributing it or donating meals to front care workers. So I think that's repurposing an emotion that guilt isn't beneficial. So acknowledging that and then finding a way, like what's in your control that you can be proactive about, can be helpful.
Courtney Diliberto is a licensed clinical social worker with University Psychological Associates. She joins us with Dr. Chastity Adams, a licensed psychologist, and Dr. Kevin Jericho, also a licensed psychologist. And we will continue our conversation about maintaining mental health and taking care of yourself mentally in this crisis. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about mental health during the COVID-19 crisis and how to take care of yourself and make you and your family members more able to deal with the pressures that you may be experiencing. Dr. Kevin Jericho is with us, a licensed psychologist, director of the Anxiety and OCD Treatment Center, and co-author of 10 Simple Solutions to Worry. Dr. Chastity Adams is also a licensed psychologist, author of Reclaiming Your Best Self, The Four Disciplines of Mindful Acceptance. And Courtney Diliberto is a licensed clinical social worker with University Psychological Associates. Dr. Jericho, you getting back to this feeling of guilt, you told one of our producers that there is a group of anxiety patients that you have seen regularly who are actually doing better psychologically as the result of social distancing, which is going on. Talk about them. Why is that the case? Why would some of these people feel better?
Yeah, well, it's certainly been an interesting phenomenon for us. You know, I would say that I think, you know, we tend to underestimate human resilience in general to a large degree and adaptability and facing challenges, that we actually do that quite well, you know, as a species. And then, you know, for my patients who have specific sources of anxiety, if you know, those triggers are not there at the moment, you know, that then the problem is temporarily solved. For example, I have several kids that I work with whose school has been a big trigger anxiety-wise. Well, they temporarily don't have to go, so it's sort of like, well, I don't really have much to focus on anxiety-wise for the moment, because what was bothering me before. I'm not in that situation anymore at the moment. So in those sort of specific, or if you, let's suppose you had to travel a lot and you had a fear of flying, for example, well, if you've been sort of told not to travel or can't travel or that sort of thing, well, that particular source of anxiety isn't present at the moment. And so it results in an improvement temporarily.
Can this period where they are feeling better, they are improving because all those stressors have been eliminated, can this be used as a time to come to grips with this in normal life and to understand what these triggers are more clearly so that when things resume something resembling normalcy, they'll be better equipped to handle those stressors?
Oh, sure. Yeah, you can certainly continue to work on those things that you were working on prior to all of this. You know, continue that work so that, yeah, when life does return to normal, you are ready for those things to return to your life.
Social distancing is taking a toll on some people, Courtney. It would seem to me that if you are single and alone, or elderly and alone, and nobody can come into your house and you can't go out, that must be incredibly difficult. And although there is technology, you can get on FaceTime, you can get on Zoom, you can actually just pick up the phone and talk to somebody, it's not the same as going out and having a cup of coffee with somebody and just chatting for hours over coffee. What can those people do to get through this, and what can they, how can they be helped?
Yeah, that's a really great question, and I think a lot of people are trying to solve. And one thing to highlight that I know Dr. Jericho is,
Jericho, yes.
Okay, sorry. Has highlighted as a theme of resiliency. And one of the biggest factors in resiliency is community, and is connecting in supportive ways with other people. And so if you are alone right now, that doesn't have to mean that you're lonely. And so getting creative, like you mentioned, with FaceTime or the app House Party, I have a lot of clients who do that, where they can play games online with other people, or they do Zoom chats, and they'll cook dinner together and they'll eat it together over Zoom, or picking up the phone and calling someone. Writing letters is another way that kind of is antiquated, but you can pull back up, or finding ways even to connect to yourself in ways that you haven't before. So I think people have an opportunity to get creative and integrate play or crafting or building. And sometimes when we're doing those things, we're tapping into something internally that makes us feel connected to other people. Meditation is another way too, to connect internally, to connect to others, or even just getting outside. If you have a yard, or you have a patio, or you can go for a walk in your neighborhood, I think sometimes just seeing another human and saying hello, waving from a distance, those are ways that we can still connect that are different than before, but still kind of have that human interaction. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Adams, any comfort in the fact that millions of people around the world are all going through this at the same time? It's cliched now because you see it on every television commercial that we're all in this together and we will get through this. But is there any real comfort in the fact that we are all going through this?
We're not alone. I think so. We've talked about clients, but personally for me to know that I'm not alone, it is comforting. If we think about ourselves, all of us are being impacted in some way. And to know that we're not being personalized or singled out, it does bring me comfort to know that we're all in this together, because I see it everywhere and I feel it. I do feel that we're all in this together. When I see some of the things that people are doing, like making a mask, donating hand sanitizers, that is connecting me with people, even from afar, to know that we're doing these things together.
Since you mentioned that you have kids in the house, I'm going to ask you this, Dr. Adams, because Susan on Facebook says our children are experiencing issues with digital learning, and that's causing us all stress. And I was going to ask about just... because we're all living through this extraordinary time, and none of us really has experienced anything like this before, when these stresses are building up, like dealing with kids, helping them through their digital online learning experience, what's the value in just cutting people some slack? Just saying, in these extraordinary times, it's okay to fail.
Absolutely. There is a lot of value in that. And in this time, in this case, I give myself a lot of grace because my patience does run short. I'm dealing with IT issues with their Chromebook. I'm dealing with, they don't want their mommy to teach them. I've had to give myself some grace. I've also had to give myself some personal timeouts. And that's been very helpful because I have two, and I sit in between two Chromebooks at two different levels, second grade and fourth grade. And it's quite the challenge. I give myself a personal timeout. I take breaths. I tell them what I'm doing. I said, I'm focusing on my breath right now because this is quite challenging. And I don't want to say anything mean. And that has been helpful for me personally to walk away, take some breaths, and to make sure I rope in my partner, my husband. Mm-hmm. Math is not my forte. So I save and reserve math for him. I help with all the other subjects and I give math to him. So we figured out how to divide and conquer in a way that works for our family.
I think all of you mentioned that we should be ready to forgive and have empathy for others in this extraordinary time. But one of the things I think you also all mentioned, and I'm going to ask you about this, Dr. Jericho, is the importance of establishing some routine because our ordinary routines have evaporated. How important is it to create this new normal routine, whatever it is, to give yourself some structure?
I think it's hugely important. I think it's one of the most important things in coping with this. You know, we see people when their structure gets broken down for whatever reason, it really impacts them. And the challenge is in a time like this, imposing your own structure, right? And we focus on the basics, just bedtime, wake time, meal times, and some exercise thrown in there, just having that sort of foundation of, you know, I'm still going to get to bed at a reasonable hour. I'm still going to get up at a reasonable hour. I'm going to still eat regular meals, just kind of, you know, getting those basics down. There can be a tendency, you know, for those things to kind of drift away. And I think that has a huge impact on our mood, on our anxiety, on our connectedness to others. So that's, to me, a very foundational tool for managing through this time, especially given the length that it's gone on for. I think it makes it even more important.
Some people, Courtney, it seems to me, are experiencing grief. They're experiencing grief because their loved ones have died. And I want to talk about that in a minute. But they're also experiencing grief for the loss of their lives as they knew it. And loss of future prospects in some cases. Maybe there were projects on the horizon that were going to be exciting for them and lucrative for them, and suddenly they're gone. How do people deal with that kind of grief?
Yeah, I think that's a really important thing to highlight because I'm having, you know, students who were supposed to graduate and they're really excited about that and they're going to miss out on walking across the stage. Or people whose anniversaries or birthdays or weddings. And all of that is important as well as people who are actually losing loved ones. So I think acknowledging the emotions that come up, because grief includes a lot of feelings, right? There's the loss of this thing. Sometimes there's anger, there's sadness, there's confusion. So I think it's important to honor all of those emotions and process it in whatever way you typically would. As well as then trying to find ways to connect to other people, to connect to people you care about, to connect to things that are important in the here and now, and doing things that make you feel good. Because often when we're experiencing grief, we'll tend to let those things that are basic self-care needs go to the wayside, like you mentioned before, sleeping, eating. So I think it's a balance of honoring what you're experiencing, connecting with people, and taking care of yourself.
And Dr. Jericho, is there a difference in dealing with the kind of grief you may be experiencing over the loss of your lifestyle and what may have been, and the loss of a loved one who you couldn't be with at the end because of the COVID virus, who you can't even really have a memorial service for because of the COVID virus? Is there a difference in that kind, in the kinds of grief we're talking about and how you'd handle those kinds of grief?
You know, I think physically and emotionally, those are experienced very similarly, although they're two very different events. So I think they can be approached in a similar fashion, you know, that grief is essentially the loss of someone or something that you really cared about and that had a positive impact, you know, on your life. And so I think we can think of those, even though one's, you know, the loss of a person and the other is maybe the loss of something else. I think we can think of those in similar terms.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Adams, Tom on Facebook writes, in addition to apps that help people keep calm, there are many apps that can help people focus on their deeply held beliefs and to nurture their faith. So I thought I'd bring that up. But then Anne emails, the biggest thing that has helped me through all of this is turning off the news. Sorry, WFAE, she says. It's just too overwhelming at times. Talk about the role media may be playing in increasing people's anxiety and how to handle that, because we want to stay informed. We need to know things in this crisis, but is there a balancing point? How do you find the balancing point?
Absolutely. The media has played a huge role in the increase in people's anxiety because they are inundated with the information 24/7. As soon as you turn on your computer, CNN, media, COVID-19, you're receiving emails, COVID-19. You listen to the radio, COVID-19. I ask my clients to limit their exposure to maybe once a day when you check in to see what is going on with COVID-19. And do not check in first thing in the morning and do not check in lastly at night. Those are not times to read about what's going on with COVID-19. Middle of the day is typically a good time because we're being inundated. And we're putting all that in our mind. It's going to make sense that our thoughts are going to go wild regarding what could happen, the what ifs, and excessive worry.
Hmm. And I want to ask Dr. Jericho, and I only have a couple minutes left here, but social media, what role it's playing in all of this? Because in the good times, social media was sometimes a negative for people because you only saw on social media the best times in other people's lives. We're all in this together. We're all suffering through this. Is social media helping or hurting?
Yeah, well, I would probably say it's a little bit of both. You know, certainly, you know, we need to find creative ways to stay connected. And so social media can certainly be an avenue towards staying connected. As Dr. Adams said, though, getting overly inundated with information on this subject can increase our anxiety. So, to me, that's a very individual question that involves some self-reflection. Hey, is this helping me? Am I feeling more connected and in tune with what's going on with my friends? Or is it a net negative where it's really just putting me in a bad mood, making me more anxious, making me feel more depressed? And I think every individual might answer that question differently. So kind of reflecting on where that fits in your life for you and then acting accordingly.
Taking care of yourself during this time period, mentally and physically, is important. And Courtney, you mentioned a diet and I think and sleep. It's important to get a lot of sleep during all of this and exercise. What kind of things can we do? What role does diet play, for instance, in making us feel better and be better during all of this?
Yeah, I think nutrition is really important right now. Starting with the basics. So getting close to 8 hours of sleep every night is important, no matter what time you go to bed, what time you get up, trying to work around that. Making sure that you're eating 3 meals a day with snacks. I have a lot of clients who have disordered eating patterns in the past where this is really resurfacing for them. Or kids and people who are home all day now who lose the structure of, oh, well, this is lunchtime, this is breakfast. And nutrition plays a really big, vital role in our physical and emotional well-being.
And let me stop you there because we're out of time. Courtney DiLiberto with University Psychological Associates, Dr. Chastity Adams, licensed psychologist in private practice, and Dr. Kevin Jericho, licensed psychologist and director of the Anxiety and OCD Treatment Center. Thank you all for the hour, and please stay safe. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.